I think that's what a lot of us learn as runners, that we don't know where running is going to take us, but we keep going anyway. And then I think for most of us, the places it takes us are far bigger than what we could have ever imagined. And that's certainly been the case for me.
You are listening to the Maybe Running Will Help podcast. We hope you'll take us on a run as you listen in to the conversations with our guests. We'll be checking in periodically to let you know how long the episode and you have been running and to share a few encouraging words to keep you listening and moving. All our episodes are made to educate, entertain, and inspire you with experienced guests, sound effects, and deep thoughts about running and life. Okay, now, if you're ready to put down some miles, lace up and let's go. The clock starts now. All right, I'm going out for a run. It's in the 40s, which is a little bit cold for me for a normal easy run, but I'm gonna get it done. And I know in a couple miles I will have warmed up. So here we go.
Help!
Hey guys, welcome to this episode about a community that gave one very special teacher a place to call home and a meaningful life through our sport. Kate Fletcher and her Lion Pride scholarship run have been covered extensively by the media. But during our conversation, Kate shares a part of her story for the first time. Listen in as we learn why helping students see their potential is really so important to Kate and how she recently experienced the love and support she always deserved from her Louisa County family. Can you imagine running 100 miles around a track? Well, that's exactly what our next guest did in 2018. Kate Fletcher is a teacher who truly goes the distance for her students, raising money by running insane distances, sometimes in a circle, to help her students make their college dreams a reality. This year, she ran 105 miles from Virginia to DC, and get this, she didn't even miss school to do it. A social media post says she Zoomed with her class from the road. Remarkably, Fletcher was back in the classroom just one day later. I'm so honored to have the opportunity to speak with Kate and learn more about the Lion Pride Run, an organization she founded in 2015 with the goal to fund scholarships for students who have not had it easy, students who have struggled and refused to give up despite the obstacles in their path. Welcome, Kate, to the show.
Hello.
All right. So I want to talk a little bit before we get started with some of your running adventures recently. I want to know a little bit about you. So can you tell us a little bit about what you do on the day-to-day besides, you know, being this superhero of a runner?
So I am a high school English teacher, and I have been teaching at Louisa County High School for, 18 years. This will be my 18th year. I teach mostly juniors. I do have some sophomores this year. In addition to being a teacher, I'm a mother to a young adult at this point. My daughter Sophie is 22, about to finish up college and perhaps become an elementary school art teacher. So she doesn't live at home anymore, but I spend a lot of time with her. I have three dogs who I mother now that she's out of the house, and I run a lot.
Yes,
brings us back to why I'm here.
Is Sophie a runner?
No, Sophie's not a runner. She is very passionate about art, and she went to the art school at Virginia Commonwealth University, which is right here in the Richmond area. So she has her passion that is equivalent. It just happens to not involve moving her legs over long distances.
What does she think about you doing it?
I think I've been running long enough that she doesn't even think about it. I started running at 35. So okay. She was about 10. So I guess she remembers me vaguely as a non-runner. But again, I don't think she really at this point thinks of me as anything other than a runner. And honestly, I don't think the long distances surprise her at all anymore.
All right. Okay, cool.
And so you work with high school students, and I want to learn a little bit more about the students because you obviously care about them a lot. You started this organization in 2015, I think, called the, what, Lions, Lion Pride Scholarship. Mm-hmm. So can you talk a little bit about your students and why you decided to start this program?
Sure. So I work in a really interesting community. It's very rural, although it's not too far really from Northern Virginia. And it's got Charlottesville on one side and then Richmond on another. But Louisa County, where I teach, is quite rural still. And it has only one high school. So every kid in Louisa, unless they're going to a private school, every kid would go to this high school, which, and this might not be something that people really think about if they're not teachers or in school, that actually makes it a very diverse place because it has to serve the entire community. So unlike perhaps a suburban area or an urban area where the schools are often quite segregated demographically, right? There might be, the kids who love to play soccer and come from very middle-class families going to one school, and the kids who have had much harder lives going to the school across town. I think all of us know that about education in America. But yep. When you work in a rural community, everyone goes to the same school. And so it's surprisingly diverse in many ways. And I teach kids from all kinds of backgrounds. And a fair number of them are from backgrounds that have been challenging in different ways. Honestly, I think being a teenager in America is challenging no matter what, what your background is. But I do see kids who have some adverse experiences in their lives, whether those are at school. Sometimes they're struggling with learning disabilities, or they've moved from school to school multiple times, or it's something that is in their background. I do teach a lot of kids who could benefit from any support that they can get. And that's really how the Lion Pride Run scholarship came to be, out of that need.
And did something happen in 2015 that kind of opened your eyes to this need for it? Was there some moment or event, or were you just like, you'd seen enough and you were like, what can I do to help at this point?
That's actually an interesting question that I haven't thought about since 2015. And there was a very big event. In 2010, our school was destroyed by an earthquake. And anyone living on the East Coast knows about this earthquake. And there are people on the West Coast who I know have made memes kind of mocking this earthquake, because obviously the earthquakes in California are so much worse. I've seen a meme at least once of a few lawn chairs tipped over, and it says the East Coast earthquake. But my school was actually right above the epicenter. Mm. So not many people know this, but the epicenter was in Mineral, Virginia, which is where the high school is. And so in 2010, the earthquake destroyed our school. It didn't completely collapse, but the ceilings fell, the lights fell, obviously the entire building shook, everyone evacuated, and we were never allowed back into the building.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, not even to get belongings. A special team of people had to go in to get all of the kids' belongings. And so we spent the next 5 years without a school, from 2010 to 2015. Well, we had a school in spirit, but we had no physical building.
Wow. And so
in the first semester is that we actually had to share a school with the middle school. So we went to the middle school and we each were assigned a classroom, and we, the high school teachers, taught Monday, Wednesday, Friday from 8 a.m. till, I want to say it was 5 or 5:30. It was a very long day to account for them for not going to school on Tuesday and Thursday. And the middle school kids have to go Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. Although I don't think that they went very often on Saturday. I think a lot of them just put their foot down to them. And so after a semester, we managed to find trailers that were brought in from all over the country. And we taught out of those trailers for the next 4.5 years while we had a new high school built. Unfortunately, FEMA built that. It's a beautiful building. It's absolutely beautiful. We never could have gotten that without the earthquake. So I guess that's the silver lining.
Yeah.
So that year, 2015, was the first year in the new building. And what I remember thinking is, you know, this terrible thing happened. This terrible thing happened that could have driven us apart. It could have caused a lot of frustration, and it did, but it could have led to very negative feelings and attitudes. The kids might have hated coming to those trailers. There could have been a lot of conflict between teachers and students and administrators. And that's not what happened at all. Really, this very hard thing brought us together. And we were still very much a community, even though we had no building. And so what I remember thinking in 2015 was that struggle obviously makes us stronger, and there are lots of cliches about that. But I also think that it is the way to a more meaningful life, not necessarily a happier life, like ice cream makes you happy, but a more meaningful life. And we had all gone through this meaningful struggle together. And as a runner, and I was a runner already at that point. And actually, I never thought about this before. I really did start running right around 2010. So I was running right around the time of the earthquake, just before I'd started running just before the earthquake. And so I knew from my experiences as a runner that all of that was true as well, that through the struggle of running, I was finding more meaning in my life, not just on those runs, but in other parts of my life too. And I knew that the kids that I teach also had their own private struggles. And I think that really is why, even though maybe I didn't put all those dots together until much, much later, why this idea came to me then. And I wasn't alone in making it happen by any means. I went to a meeting. There's a part of being a teacher, at least in Virginia, where we have to be part of a correlate. And the correlate is meant to be teacher driven, to find ways to improve the school and to improve the experiences of our students. And so it's teachers trying to do their own thing separate from the administration, just purely from their experiences as teachers, that will make the school better in some way. And it's meant to be a very creative way to create change from teachers and through the teachers by students. And so I went to a correlate meeting, and a friend and I, who was also an English teacher, Carrie Hicks, we presented this idea that perhaps I could run really far, that it could raise money for kids who were also willing to go the distance in their own lives.
What about Carrie? She didn't run? So this is funny. She put all this on you?
Yeah, so there's always been an organizer. And that, until this year, actually was Carrie Hicks. This year, Carrie took a leave of absence and another teacher came in, although Carrie actually still did a great deal from home. Because the run actually has always entailed a ton of logistics, especially the most recent run I did, the logistics are actually really overwhelming.
Yeah.
And so the joke I've always made is that I'm the brains. I mean, I'm so sorry. No, reverse. They're the brains and I'm the brawn. They're the brains. They do all the organizing and I'm the one who just has to wake up the day of and run, and obviously run all the training miles before that.
You always make it sound like you have the easy job.
I think I actually might have the easy job. And then what's really cool is that we have a class called the leadership class at our school, which is an elective where kids who would like to embrace that kind of role in the school community join. And you might think, oh, I guess they read boring books about being leaders. Not at all. They actually just do things in the community. So they find all kinds of ways to help in the school community, but also the larger community of Louisa County, and to act as leaders by helping people, essentially. And so my run is actually one of their projects. The Lion Pride Run is one of their projects. So this other teacher, Carrie Hicks, and then this year there was another teacher added in, Meredith Williamson. They are in charge of a whole group of students who make it their mission to organize the run. And it's one of the ways that the run is really a school-wide effort and not just me randomly running down a road. It's really an enormous effort on behalf of those students, and some other students. Like, for instance, there's a group of kids who take culinary arts who make all my food.
Stop! What?
Yeah, it's super cute. Yeah, and then the band is always there playing. And yeah, the kids get involved in a lot of different ways, which makes it a much more meaningful experience. Yeah.
Wow, it's truly like a community event. And
it really
is. You get to, you know, do the running. Wow, yeah. That's awesome. I think, yeah, I would prefer somebody to figure out all that other stuff and just tell me what to do. Yeah. I don't think, I'm not very good at that piece of things.
Yeah, I know. And when I hear about people doing ultra runs in the mountains, I'm like, wait, they have to carry their own stuff? They don't have a police car carrying their stuff for them? You know, wait, they had to organize everything and pack their bag and plan all this out? They didn't have other people making their food for them? Yeah, no, I'm spoiled. That's the truth of it. They take good care of me and they make it all happen. And on top of that, they do all this fundraising because the whole point of it is to raise scholarship money for students who are working very, very hard in their lives to overcome difficult obstacles and move forward with the next stage of their life. So we're raising money for a scholarship that helps kids go to college. And we're looking for a certain type of student that I think is often overlooked, who has overcome something difficult, or oftentimes, you know, many difficult aspects of their lives to find success and find their way. And they've metaphorically, remember, I'm an English teacher, taken the harder road in life.
Got it. Yeah.
Okay. 15 minutes in. Great work. Let's keep going.
So what, how do they write an essay or do they get nominated or how do they, you know, qualify for this scholarship or how do you pick them?
Well, I'm quite an introvert really. And so to honor the introverts, there is an essay option. And they write an essay that answers the question essentially, how have you overcome struggles in your life and where do you plan to go moving forward? But then there are also interviews set up for the extroverted students where we ask the exact same questions, but we do it in person. Yeah, it's always very hard to choose. And we don't have a set number of kids that we give the scholarship to each year. We have a set amount of money that we, you know, whatever it is that we raise that year that we can give away. And then we really look at need, and those interviews and essays and divvy up the money in a way that we feel is fair and that honors them.
Wow. I bet you've heard some pretty heartwarming and courageous stories from these kids. It's got to be difficult.
Yeah, definitely. You know, we've given it to foster children. We've given it to a student who was a refugee. And so often the students themselves don't actually see what they've gone through, as being that difficult because they've been so immersed in it. I'll always remember a student, and I won't give away too many identifying details, but this was a student who, was born in Russia and both of their parents died and they ended up in an orphanage for many, many years, I think a decade. And then finally they were adopted by an American. and they played a sport at the high school. And in the interview, I asked them if they'd overcome any challenges in their life. And they thought about it for a very long time. And then they said, yeah, on the field, you know, we play teams that are so much better than us. And that was the obstacle that they fought first before, you know, their background story, which they just accepted as that's what life has been. And they were incredibly grateful to be here and to have different opportunities and to finally have a family. So they didn't really actually see that as an obstacle. They saw it as a story that had led them to this situation that they were very grateful for.
Do grades come into play? Because, you know, a lot of scholarships are based on, you know, performance and, you know, extracurricular things or sports or whatever. Does any of that come into play, or is it strictly overcoming these, you know, unique circumstances?
So definitely, I guess when we talk about grades, I look at them with an open mind to some extent. But yes, they are, you know, quote unquote, good students in the sense that they have a plan for their future. So their plan might be college. Occasionally, it's been a trade school of some kind. So maybe more than grades, we're looking for this isn't a word I like very much, but I'm going to say ambition. I'm going to take it back. We're looking for a sense of purpose. So they might not have a 4.6 GPA, and there are kids, right? There's always the valedictorian. There are kids who have that GPA, and they are getting plenty of scholarships and deserve plenty of scholarships for how hard they've worked. The students we're picking for the scholarship that is the Lion Pride Run scholarship specifically, while they do have strong enough grades to have a plan for their future, I think it's more important that they have a sense of purpose and they are working hard and moving towards that. So I never doubt that they're going to go on and do bigger things. That's very, very apparent. So the student that I was just mentioning, actually, the one who had spent the vast majority of his childhood in an orphanage in Russia, that student actually had to stay in school until he was 21 because he had arrived so late in this country that he spoke very little English to no English when he got here. And so in order for him to get through the classes that are required to have a high school diploma in Virginia, and to learn English well enough to pass the required, what we call SOL tests, in different states they're called different things, but I think we all understand there's standardized testing in this country, I won't go down that road, but in order to pass those tests, which require you to be able to read in English at a fairly high level, it wasn't that he had failed classes, it was that he had been in ESL classes learning how to speak English, and that had pushed back his graduation. And that student had such a good attitude that I remember when he got too old to play the sport that he loved, instead of saying, I'm not allowed to play the sport because it's a public high school and I'm past the age where I'm legally meeting the criteria, he just became a coach. He was like, oh, I'll just be a coach then. Perfectly happy just to put on a different hat. But the determination to graduate was relentless. So to me, that says so much about his willingness to do whatever it took to get to where he needed to go, that the grades are almost irrelevant. Not completely irrelevant, but there's a much bigger picture.
Like, is there a reason that these kinds of students are so important to you? Do you have any personal, you know, reason that these are the kind of people you want to help?
I do. And I think that we've all overcome obstacles in our lives. I don't think anyone's life is even close to easy. And the more I get to know people, the more I realize that that's true of everyone. In my own life, I came from a family of divorce, which is also, of course, incredibly common. And so even though I was born in Canada, I think I mentioned before that I was born in Vancouver, Canada, my parents split up and my mother married an American. And I actually ended up in Northern Virginia. As a high school student in Northern Virginia, I had something that, looking back now, I realized was a devastating event in my life. And to put it, you know, into just a bite-sized sentence or two, I was coming home from a school event with a friend, and we were very violently assaulted sexually at gunpoint. And so my life was threatened. I was 15 years old. I had the gun held to my head. And it was very hard to talk about. I couldn't talk to my family about it. I had my friend, thank goodness I did have my friend who was with me that night. And to some extent we talked about it, although we also drifted apart. And I think that definitely was because of what we had been through. And then I just tried to go on with my life. I tried to go on to college, and I was successful in college. I was able to find a career path. Obviously, I became a teacher. I got married. I had a child, my daughter. But I've always felt that, well, I shouldn't say always. Now, looking back at my 15-year-old self, I understand that I really needed support and love. And I would have benefited tremendously from someone seeing my potential. Somehow I found a way to see my own potential. And I think running is a big part of that. I think becoming a runner has shown me that I'm stronger than I thought I was, that I have feelings and thoughts that maybe I didn't want to feel or think for a long time. When I'm running, I feel like I'm rediscovering myself, like I'm truly in my own skin, and I have a greater understanding of who I am and where I'm going. And in a way, it was running that came along and was that support for me. Mm-hmm. I know that's because running isn't a person, but running mm-hmm. almost feels like a good friend who came along mm-hmm. that I never expected, because I didn't even start running until I was 35, and helped me find myself. But I shouldn't have had to wait that long. Right. I shouldn't have had to go 20 years not feeling comfortable in my own skin, not knowing truly who I was, not believing in my potential. And what I do as a teacher at the high school with the students I teach, because obviously I'm not just a runner there, a teacher there, but what I do with the kids that I interact with every day and what I do with the run is just what I think of as my small part, because that happens to be my daily, how can I put it? I don't want to say career, because that sounds so, that, you know, it's more than that to me, but that's my daily calling. I go mm-hmm. and I give to those kids what I know I needed for myself, and I'm happy to do it. And it, of course, when you do that for someone else, it gives you so much more. They give me so much meaning. Just being a teacher every day, just spending that time with them every day, gives me a great deal of meaning in my life. And then the run is really, I always say it's like Christmas. It's just the cherry on top to do something above and beyond my daily life as a teacher. But it's something I love. You know, it's not, it doesn't feel like a sacrifice by any means. It's, yeah. It's, you know, I don't mean to diminish it, but it's almost like people who grow their hair really, really long and then cut it off and donate it to someone who has lost their hair to chemo, right? In the sense that I would be running anyway. I love to run. I find meaning in running. So to do what I love to do and would do anyway, and then to be able to use that in service of the kids that I love, is, yeah, it's like Christmas. It's just a very meaningful part of my life that I stumbled into. I didn't know this was my path in any way. I think that's what a lot of us learn as runners, that we don't know where running is going to take us, but we keep going anyway. And then I think for most of us, the places it takes us are far bigger than what we could have ever imagined. And that's certainly been the case for me.
I love that the runs that you do are so community involved. And so I want to talk a little bit about these crazy runs that you're doing. And I have to start with the 2018 run, because I know that you just did 105 miles, but somehow I feel like running around a track for 100 miles is like absolutely horrific. Can you, was this the first event? No, because you started in 2015. So like, can you take us through like each of these events?
Sure. Yeah. So in 2015, right after that earthquake, when we went to the meeting and we proposed this idea, like, oh, Kate likes to run. Maybe she could run and it would raise some money and we could use it for a scholarship. It really was that. It was that.
Kate likes to run. So maybe like a 5K or something, but like, no.
Yeah. Well, at that point I had run a marathon. So my furthest distance that I'd done was the Richmond Marathon here in Virginia. And so I figured, well, you know, if I can run for that many hours straight, what if I ran twice as many hours straight? And I showed up that morning that, you know, we'd planned for. The morning announcements went on and I just ran around the track all day. And it's a gravel track. We do have a perfectly nice track for track meets that's that spongy material, but I've always been wary of that because it seems so unnatural. I don't know what would happen if I ran all day on something that you're meant to do, you know, a 100 yard sprint on. So it's always been the gravel track, which feels like almost like a trail. And I just ran all day, finished it when the school buses were leaving. And I had been very frightened that it would be too hard. I had secretly hoped that it wouldn't work out, if I'm honest, that something would go wrong with the planning and we wouldn't be able to do it. But everyone was all thumbs up. Oh, you'd be okay. And it did work out and we raised money. And when I actually did it, I realized, of course, the secret that every ultra runner knows, which is just, oh, you slow down. You just have to run slower. It's really not that complicated. And so I probably ran about 40 miles that year, and I didn't have a watch. I remember I borrowed someone's Fitbit, but it wasn't very accurate. It was all very low key and low tech. And yeah. Then the next year, I just got there a little earlier. The next year, I just started before school started. And so by the time the school buses came, I was right at 50 miles. So I did 50 on the track. And then it was 2018, the following year, that I ran the full 100. And all along, the kids have been so supportive. That 100 miler on the track, there were kids who spent the night there in tents.
What?
Yeah.
I love them.
Yeah. The culinary arts kids made my food. The band played. The cheerleaders cheered. Everyone made it into something that was useful for the kids. I remember there were math teachers who brought their kids out and they had them trying to calculate my pace, you know, showing them different formulas to figure out different aspects of my run that way. There were
That's
kids
amazing.
Just
walking,
right? Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that was at the track. And then the following year after my 100 on the track, I did what was probably my favorite run so far. I ran to each school in the entire county. So there are four elementary schools, a middle school, and a high school. So it was actually a geometry class planned out the best route for me. They figured out what would be the best route, you know, taking into account elevation. So while, you know, the distance from this school to that school might be shorter, or the elevation would be higher, and they, you know, they figured it out. And then I ran their route, and it took exactly the entire day. So I got to the first school just as the kids were getting off the buses. I arrived and started my run. And then I arrived at the final school, both were elementary schools, as they were coming out to get on their afternoon buses to go home. And that was a lot of fun because I got to interact with the younger kids that are at the elementary schools that I had, up until that point, of course, had just been stuck on the track.
Did they all know you were coming? Were they like waiting for you? Were they like, yeah.
And their kids, I mean, their teachers had all done activities with them to prepare them. You know, they drawn pictures of what they thought I looked like running. I'm sure they'd learned a little bit about running and why people do it, and depending on their age. I remember this one school, I ran past these double doors and I was, I'm leaving out a fun detail. At each school, I would actually run through the school. So I'd get to a school and I just dart through the school and down through the hallways. Yeah. I think actually a lot of runners could do this that are teachers. Like I've always felt like this could be something that other people take up. It's certainly entirely possible to run to each school in a community and run through each school. So the kids would line up and high-five me, but I ran past some double doors and I heard shouts and screams in there. And so someone got it on camera. I kind of doubled back and I realized it was the cafeteria. And the kids were literally standing on their little stools, jumping up and down, screaming, like, go, Fletch, go. And so I ran into the cafeteria and I ran up and down the aisles, and you know, there were sandwiches everywhere and milk and kids screaming and jumping. And it was really fun. It was just a lot.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And then of course, at some point I ran through my own high school where I teach. And so that was that year. And then the next year I ran actually to the capital of Virginia, which is Richmond. And I ran to the Capitol building and met with the governor's wife and some other very important officials. And the steps to the Capitol building are kind of like the Rocky steps in the movie. So I did the little, my principal Lee Downey taught me how to do a special spin at the top of the stairs so that he's apparently watched the Rocky movie many more times than I have. And so that was the first time we got the experience of running outside of the county of Louisa, because to get to Richmond, I had to cross through several different counties. And in those several different counties, police had to be involved in the different jurisdictions. And so we got that experience of, well, I didn't, because I'm just brawn, but the brains of the operation, the teachers who organize everything, and the kids in the leadership class who do all the hard work behind the scenes, they got that experience of reaching out to police departments and putting together this very logistically difficult plan. And then I did take a year off during the pandemic, but this year we took what we'd done when we ran to Richmond and we just doubled it. Running to Richmond was 50 miles and it was, I guess, three counties and a city with different police in each one. And then running to Washington, D.C., which is this year's, I did this in early April of this past year, well, of 2022. I left Louisa County High School and I ran 105 miles and I finished at the Lincoln Memorial, actually the reflecting pool right behind the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C. Yeah. And we also had to plan all of that just like going to Richmond, but of course it was twice as much, maybe three times as much. And I did have police escorts the entire way. I had a Louisa escort the entire way who never left my side.
Wow.
And then I had police coming in from each county. So there were times that there were, you know, 10 to 12 police cars, which I felt a little self-conscious about because I was going very, very, very slowly at that point. But they kept me safe. So again, just a massive community effort. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, it's an amazing community. That's so awesome. When was the first year that you really started, people started to notice what you were doing? I mean, was it that very first year, or was it like your run when you ran to Richmond, or when did you start getting recognized for this?
I think it did just grow incrementally, and without even realizing it, each run got incrementally bigger. So that the first three were on that track, and really it was just the high school that was being very directly affected by what I was doing. And I will say that third one, when I ran the 100 miles on the track, GoFundMe, the company, had a film studio at the time. They don't have it anymore, but they had GoFundMe studios, and we had a very small, minuscule presence on GoFundMe. Most of our fundraising was coming at that time from local businesses. So the students in this leadership class that we have at the high school would go out during leadership class time. They would go out into the community and explain what I was doing and ask for donations.
Wow.
And that was, yeah. So they learned those skills, major people skills right there. I couldn't do that. I could not do that. And so they were asking for donations from these small businesses and building a reputation really for the run and for the scholarship and for what it stands for and who we help. But then we had this little GoFundMe site on the side, only because every once in a while, someone's grandma would say like, could I pay $10? You know, she wasn't a small business, but she wanted to make a contribution.
Yeah.
And we didn't really have any way to take that kind of donation. So we set up a GoFundMe site. We made nothing on it. Barely anything. And yet somehow someone in GoFundMe at the company saw it and decided that we would be a great story for one of their films. And so they sent a film crew at no cost to us. All of this was on them. They sent a film crew from LA.
Wow.
And they came, of course, that was huge for the kids in it's a small community. And it's like, these tattooed guys coming in from LA, and they're super cool, and they filmed the whole thing. And so that GoFundMe video, which is 10 minutes long, is really well made. And that changed everything. That definitely brought in money from all over, honestly, all over the world. We were getting donations from places like Japan and Australia.
That's amazing.
It was exciting. I remember that I had it projected for the students I was teaching in third period, which is the period that kids go to lunch. And so we teach and then they go to lunch and then they come back. And while they were at lunch, I raised something like $5,000 just while they were at lunch.
And they
came back and were just in just absolute shock. Like, what is happening? You know, and they're juniors. So the money wasn't for them, but they were so excited. And, you know, just it was just very eye-opening. And we all were getting a kick out of it. Those were exciting days when there was that shift, like you're asking, when did it really become something bigger?
Yeah.
It wasn't just the high school anymore. It was probably that run and the attention we got because of the GoFundMe video. And actually the New York Times even sent a reporter, because the New York Times was doing a story on GoFundMe Studios. And we just got lucky that they happened to be making our film when the New York Times wanted to do its story. So they sent a reporter down. And there's a great picture of our school mascot. We're the Lions. There's a great picture of our school mascot, you know, dressed as a lion, being interviewed by a New York Times reporter. And you have to remember, we're very rural.
Yeah.
So it does feel like, wait, how is the New York Times here?
It's like a movie. It's like,
yeah. Yeah.
Oh, and then you know what? Yeah. They should. This could be a movie. I can see it. Like I think somebody should do a movie on this whole community and you running and stuff. I would totally watch it. I'm so inspired right now.
All right. I am, a little over a mile and a half from home. Currently going up a hill. I would say these easy runs are really something.
Help!
All right, Let's go.
I love it. Oh my God. Ah, that's so cool. I love you even more. And I love your community, like hearing your story and how everybody comes together. Like, I'm so like, I have so much energy right now. I'm just like wired. Yeah. I love it.
And I should say, Louisa is a very special place. And I grew up feeling like I never really had a definite home. I think a lot of people feel this way, partly because I lived in Vancouver for my younger childhood, and my parents were both from England. And so they were from a different place. And then I was from a different place. And then my parents split up and I moved to yet another place. And I've always felt like I didn't really belong anywhere. And Louisa, this small town in rural Virginia, has given me a home. I really mean that. Even though I actually don't live in Louisa, I live closer to Richmond. I feel like when I go to work, I'm going home. And then I come at the end of the day, I go to the place where I live to turn around the next morning and go home again. It's a very loving, warm place. And I mean, that's not to say it's a perfect place, because nowhere is perfect. But there is a kind of love and support there that I have never known anywhere else. And I'm a weird person. Like, people who run a 100 miles on a track are weird. Let's face it. Like, it's a weird way to be. And as far as I know, there aren't other people who want to run 100 miles around a track currently living in Louisa, but they embrace me and love me just the way I am, in a way that is very important to me. You know, I really feel that love and return it. So you're right in your reaction to hearing about this community. It is everything that you're feeling right now. It is that. Yeah.
What do you guys, have you already started planning for next year? Do you know what, can you talk about it, or is it, or is this something that the students are still like, do they surprise you with it? Are you like not sure what's going to happen? And then they're like, okay, this is what we're doing.
Oh, that would be fun. They're actually kind enough to put it in my hands. I am actually the one who gets to decide how far I'm running. That never occurred to me. I almost want to put it in their hands. That would actually be really exciting to put it in their hands and see what they came up with.
Yeah.
It's always been me and the teacher, you know, for many years it was a woman named Carrie Hicks. And then this past year it was Meredith Williamson. But it's always been us who've decided on the distance, and it's always been, and the location, and it's always been that we come up with this crazy idea that we think, well, that could never happen, ha ha ha, and then we actually do it. So like the run to Richmond, Carrie Hicks, the organizer, was at the Capitol building with her daughter on a field trip, and she sent me a picture of the Capitol building stairs and said, imagine if you ran here next year. And we were, ha ha, that would be so crazy. And then we did it. And of course, running to the Lincoln Memorial seemed absolutely insane. But I've been the one who's come up with it, and maybe that needs to change. I'm gonna sit on that for a little bit, because that would be a lot of fun. It would be even more fun if they didn't tell me until the morning of.
That could be. I'll be there for that. That's so awesome. That I see. Yeah. That's the kind of stuff. Like, I don't even want to know what I'm getting into. Just tell me. Yeah. Like, I don't even want to know. Exactly. I do have another question. I know we're gonna wrap up here, but like, so as far as the figuring out the route and stuff like that, do you get a map, or like basically are you just following signs and you have people, like, because I would get lost. I 100% would get lost. How do you not get lost?
Yeah. So we've definitely
have police escorts.
Well, we have police escorts, yes. Yes. And we've had the geometry students helped with the routes when I ran to each school in Louisa. And there were students who helped with the route to Richmond as well. But the route to DC was so extreme. And of course, we had to take into account that it wouldn't be safe to run on a highway, like 90, Interstate 95, or maybe, I don't even think it's legal. You can't run on 95. So the logistics, like I keep saying, were enormous. And we had to spend a lot of time looking at the route. I actually started the process by simply, this is going to sound so old school. I went to MapQuest and I put in the high school, and then I put in the Lincoln Memorial, and then I clicked on the walking man. Do you know there's a walking man in MapQuest?
He's in
And
New
so,
York. Yeah.
yeah, so that was the basic route. And then it was just changed and adapted and adjusted. And at just almost in at the last minute, my brother-in-law, who lives up in Northern Virginia, my sister's husband, pointed out that I could make the run shorter and easier and less stressful, shorter by, by a couple miles, but less stressful if I ran on the local bike path, which meant that the last 9 miles, I think it was 9 miles, maybe it was 12 even, I was on a bike path instead of on a road. And just as an aside, I will say that to bring things full circle, it was on that bike path when I was walking home from school at the age of 15 that I had been attacked, my friend. And this new route that my brother-in-law was suggesting would take me right by that spot.
Wow.
And this was at a time when the man who had attacked us had actually, after 30 years, finally been found and arrested. And I had just gone to his sentencing hearing a few weeks before my run to the Lincoln Memorial. Not even a few weeks. It happened right before the run. And so that route turned into this kind of epic rewrite of that experience, where instead of being a terrified child, caught unaware, walking home with a friend, expecting to have a sleepover and to be a 15-year-old child, and something terrible had happened, now I was a grown woman who had learned to find herself through running and had found this power in running and a way to do good for kids just like me through running. And my path took me right past that exact spot on the grass where this thing had happened. And I was able to run there from a totally new place inside of myself. And not only that, but the Falls Church police, who perhaps in some ways had not been there for me when I was 15, and we don't need to get into that, but I'll leave it at that, and made amends. And this man had been caught, and the Falls Church police and various other key figures in Falls Church, when I turned that corner and I was headed down that stretch of the bike path, were there, and it was raining and there were umbrellas. Oh, and I was with my daughter. My daughter had come to meet me. She had stayed the night with my sister. So my sister and my daughter were there. And it was this beautiful thing where I felt loved and supported, and I was loving and supporting. And it was so far from what had happened so many years ago. And from there, I went to the Lincoln Memorial and finished the run. My daughter was there. All my, well, not all the students of Louisa County High School, but many, many, many students from Louisa, not just the high school, some elementary school kids that were there too. Many students who I care a great deal about, many of whom I've taught, were all there at the finish line. And it was so beautiful and profound and meaningful to me. I don't know what question you asked me, or oh, you were just asking me about the route, but I again, I'm an English teacher, so I can't help but think in metaphors that that route was definitely much more than just a running route. Although I think that's almost always the case, that the paths we're running with our feet are much more than that.
I typically ask at the end of a podcast interview for final thoughts, but I kind of want to leave it. I kind of want to leave it there because I think it's such a beautiful ending.
Thank you. And thank you for listening and for what you do.
Thank you for your time today. And we wish you the best with next year. We want to know what you're up to. I think you really need to give some consideration to letting the kids take over and surprise you. If they need some help thinking of some ideas, tell them to give me a shout. I'm sure I can think of something crazy.
All right, guys, we did it. Good job. Our run is done. Special thanks to Kate for sharing her story with us today. Please check out the show notes. There is a link to the GoFundMe documentary that we talked about, the New York Times feature. There's a link for that. But most importantly, there's a link to how to support Kate and the Lion Pride Run, her community, her students. So please go check it out. And thanks for listening today. Hope you guys enjoyed it. And I will talk to you next time.
Thanks for checking out another episode of the Maybe Running Will Help podcast. Remember to subscribe to the podcast and share the show if you enjoyed this content. Oh, and tag us on Instagram and Facebook so that we can thank you for helping us to grow and reach more people with the intention of providing hope to others through our community. Together, we can show others that running and our community will help. Have a great run, everybody.
Yay! Oh, we'll do my icebreaker. Yay! Okay. Would you rather run with no socks or no sports bra?
No sports bra.
Okay. Would you rather run naked or in a snowsuit?
Naked.
Okay. Would you rather run in shoes that are too big or too small?
Too big for sure.
Okay. Blisters or chafing?
Chafing.
These are hard. None of them are good. More annoying, bugs in the summer or ice in the winter?
Bugs in the summer.
I agree. Especially the cicadas. Did you guys have the cicadas last year?
Not where I live, not too badly, but I am in a very, very hot place, Central Virginia. And I'm actually originally from Vancouver, Canada, which is a beautiful place with very cool, lovely temperatures. So ice isn't a problem and bugs definitely are a problem. Yeah.